Hello.
Hi, everyone.
My name is John.
My name is Arvin.
This is Behind the Scenes
of Our Best Days.
Season 7. Season 7. And, you know, we just finished with our Easter production.
That's right.
And our last podcast was all about the Easter production. We had Dom DeMeo in here.
Yeah.
What was it all about?
You guys talked about the songs you wrote. We talked about the story. What's funny is when we recorded that, it was the Wednesday, right before the
first show happened.
Yeah.
So looking back on it.
And then Thursday through Sunday happened. And it went great.
Yeah, I thought it went really good. I'm also thinking, you know, whenever you do one of those productions, for any of you guys who are new to this podcast, we talk about the behind the scenes of Victory's ministry.
Yeah.
You know, all the entities that we have. And so currently we are in the whole spring of 2024. And so we just finished with this production. And, you know, there was, I want to say 250 cast and crew members.
It's over 300 actually.
And then over 60,000 people experienced Proof. Now that is live and online.
That's awesome.
Live, I think it was like 20 something thousand.
Yeah.
A little under 20.
Sure.
And then like over 40,000 online.
Amazing.
So man, it was really, really awesome. We had lots of altar response, 740 altar responses.
That's awesome.
Which means people can come down for prayer, for healing or salvations or all those things. Anyways, but when you come out of that, you're like, okay, we really, really want to celebrate that.
Yeah.
At the same time, your humanity kicks in and you're like, I am tired. And I'm also kind of like, I think you pour so much emotion into something. And I don't know if you guys are like this, those of you who are listening or watching. But anytime you have a big project, you put so much emotion into something that you don't have emotion left.
That's right. You're drained.
I felt drained.
Totally.
And so like afterwards, I like could not feel anything.
Sure.
Like if something sad happened, I don't know if I would have cried.
Fair. Yeah.
Is that bad to say?
No. I think that's very, very honest. It's probably a side of performing and producing things that most people don't feel, but there is some parallel somewhere. When you work on a big project and you're finally done, because that was a year in the making of just conversations and trying to finagle things. We filmed for it out of town and
it was definitely a lot. And like I said, it is something that was so enjoyable and so rewarding, and we heard so many incredible testimonies of people who saw. If you have not seen the production Proof, we don't hold that against you.
Yeah, pause this and go watch it.
Yeah, but pause it and go watch it. Just the reason why is we really believe in the script and the story. We address the stages of grief and how it ties in with the resurrection, and I just think it's so cool and powerful. Dom DeMeo, you know, is someone who did so great with the music.
Yes.
Him and our producer, John Luke Lewis. Yeah. Everything is just really, really sharp. But after that, the reality sets in of, oh my goodness. Like right after, I took my kids to Galveston.
Nice.
All right, so you guys, this Easter production happened while we were practicing for, we practiced during spring break. So.
Yeah.
Every kid at every school was on spring break, except for my kids and all the kids in the cast and crew. We had practice every night.
That's right. Yeah.
So the parents did not go on spring break trips or did not go anywhere because their kids were in the production.
That's right.
And so, and then my son's birthday was happening during that. And so I was like, okay, we're going to drive to Galveston. It's the closest beach to where we are in Tulsa.
Totally. Yeah, very nice.
Anyways, so that was... I mean, anytime you drive with kids under the age of 10, it is just nonstop. But it is definitely fun and rewarding. But I think it always comes back down to burdens and boundaries. That's kind of what I wanted to talk about.
Very good. Okay.
Is that healthy burdens?
Yeah.
But also healthy boundaries.
Interesting. What made that come up for you?
I think that with Proof, if, you know, and those of you who are listening and watching, you probably do something that your friends are amazed that you do, mm-hmm. that you do so well,
yeah.
that other people probably are not graced for.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that me and you, Arvin, and the people that are involved at Victory, we are graced for this season.
Yeah, definitely.
Not saying it's going to end, but I think that
yeah.
Nothing is promised forever. No, and so it's just, it's smart to say we are graced for this right now.
Yeah.
And I think it is a healthy burden because it is heavy.
Mm-hmm.
That, when I say it,
mm-hmm.
the production.
Yeah.
From writing to all of those things, me and Arvin, right before this podcast, we're just talking through the outline of Christmas 2024
yeah.
and Easter 2025. And I'm so, it got me excited, but almost overwhelmed.
Sure.
Because we're going to do something that we've never done before.
Yeah.
You guys are the first ones to hear about it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's going to be extremely awesome.
Yeah.
Arvin said it's the next step in the evolution of
yeah.
our storytelling here at Victory within our gospel retellings.
Yeah.
And so anyways, all that to say,
yeah.
healthy burdens. I think that you know, in the Bible it says my yoke is easy and my burden is light.
Yeah.
But at the same time, the yoke and the burden do exist.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
And so anyone who is looking for a burden-free life, probably Christianity is not the best for you. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like
yeah.
literally our theme is the cross.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Like that's the symbol of our faith.
Right.
And so anyone who is like, oh man, I'm really going through it. I'm like, yeah, well, you are a believer. If they're a believer, I say, yeah. then you are equipped for it.
Yeah.
And I have to look at myself in the mirror and say that. Yeah. But I think that the healthy burdens is something that is not too heavy that it crushes you.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
it's heavy enough to where it forces you to rely on people like this previous production
mm-hmm.
or, you know, we're getting ready to dive into a worship recording night here mm-hmm. in a few weeks with Victory Worship. You know, and then we have conference, and then, you know, on anything.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever you have people who can share that burden, it is something to where you're like, oh man, this is huge, but
mm-hmm.
it's happening.
Yeah.
And we're doing it. And then on the other side, on the boundary side, it is very much, at least for me, it mm-hmm. is like, I have to be very strict with my free time immediately after a big...
Oh yeah.
Because I view Proof, mm-hmm. the production, I view it as a win.
Big time. Yeah, oh yeah.
And any of you guys know that right after a win, sometimes comes a crash.
Big time, yeah, yeah.
And so what I have seen
sure.
the last 4 years, I've gone to a place that is, it's like a counseling center that I go to.
Yeah.
And I go in the spring mm-hmm. on purpose
oh,
because
yeah.
the spring usually... I have like a crash.
Yeah.
Not energy wise,
uh-huh.
physically, but like sure. mentally and emotionally.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think that like we get through Easter
mm-hmm.
and then you have like April and May and my kids are in school. Mm-hmm. I'm also coaching. So mm-hmm. my schedule is around that.
Yeah.
And so by the end of May, I'm like, I can't go into summer and or else I will mentally fall apart.
Absolutely.
So I have to be very strict on yeah. my boundaries.
Yeah.
And, you know, I had a friend bring it up to me. It's like, why every spring I feel like you become a recluse when everyone else in the spring
sure.
becomes out and about.
Social butterflies.
A
yeah.
social butterfly in the
yeah.
spring. And I'm like, I don't mind being a social butterfly in the spring, but just me and my kids.
Fair, absolutely.
Like, I don't really want to go and hang out with people.
Of course.
Anyways,
yeah.
what I don't want to make this all about me, but I have noticed
yeah.
anytime there is something big that you accomplish,
yeah.
a temptation for a crash could be very soon, right it's after.
Sure. Yeah.
It's just because our life was not meant to live mm-hmm. on one level of hype.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
right?
I agree. Absolutely. Yeah. Because then it becomes normal and then you're just always adrenally fatigued.
Adrenally fatigued.
You're like, I don't know. You're always outputting. And I think getting back into like cocoon time is important.
Yeah.
It makes sense if you look at the way the calendar year, especially this last year was set up. It was... Christmas production.
Yes.
Conference less than a month later.
Mercy.
Easter production.
Two and a half months after.
Yeah, everything between December like 9th and March 31st were the three
biggest events.
Biggest events. So it only makes sense that after that you're mentally, physically, spiritually exhausted, and then it's important. But then I think knowing that ahead of time now, you can kind of, that's where the boundaries part comes into the burden. Like you can kind of portion it out, and it doesn't have to be overwhelming.
Right.
But it is important to retreat. And I did the same thing where I spent the whole week like in the steam room staring at the wall for 30, 40 minutes.
And people are like, is Arvin okay?
And I'm like, this has never been better.
I've
like,
never been better.
Like, I need to do this. I need my brain to kind of be on white noise mode if it's ever going to get back to being really bright and colorful mode.
You know what is unique is that, so I work with high school students and yeah. I see them consistently on their phones.
Yeah.
You know?
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, man. And I'm someone that I am also on my phone.
Yeah.
And I realize if I am constantly being visually stimulated,
yeah.
there is no time
yeah.
for me to do nothing.
Right.
And we actually said this in an earlier season.
I'm sure.
We said that boredom
yes.
has become a learned
mm-hmm.
creative art.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
People do not allow themselves to get bored. But because in reality, for any of you listening or watching, boredom is the birthplace of creativity.
I agree.
Because you don't stay bored for 5 minutes.
Right.
Well, next time, set a timer.
Yeah.
You will be bored.
Yeah.
I'll say 30 minutes. You will never stay bored for 30 minutes. I promise to God.
Yeah.
Hand on the Bible.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah.
After 5 to 10 minutes, your brain begins to figure out.
Yeah.
Something creative to do.
Yeah. Boredom is like the bridge to the boardroom of your soul. Where
boredom is the bridge to the boardroom of your soul. That's good.
Yeah, because you get into where your certain emotions of yours can finally surface that have been kind of held down by distraction, or you're constantly stimulated by other things. And if you were to not do that, then you'd constantly be... your creativity would merely be derivative of everything else. So it'd be like, I watched this, I saw this, I heard this, I saw this online, I did this. Let's just throw all that stuff onto the table and we'll mix the ingredients up just different enough to where it's like our thing. Versus saying, if I get alone, someone who does this very well is Jerry Lorenzo.
Mm.
We've watched the
Fear of God.
Yeah, Designer for Fear of God. He did a recent video where he went behind the vision of his athletics line and whatever he was doing. And I watch it constantly because the whole time he's talking about how his version of repetition is fashion has spring and summer, fall and winter,
yeah.
two collections a year. And when he showed up, he did not enter that and he wasn't doing it that way. And it created a lot of issues for him. And then essentially in this video, he's talking about, I'm not in that conversation. I'm having my own conversation. So he was talking about getting alone, having some space to just allow it to speak to him. I think that's why boredom is important. Because when you hear boredom, it sounds like a negative, but what it really means is solitude.
Solitude.
The opportunity for some like self-reflection. And I think that's why those post-production weeks of just, let me go chill and do nothing. Let me go read something that has nothing to do with what I'm working on. And let me like let my brain take a break, an actual break, instead of constantly being... I feel bad for kids now growing up that they have this nonstop receiving from what has already been created, because it minimizes the chance that they could make something for themselves, because they don't have the space to... your imagination is a muscle, and you have to strengthen it with boredom and space to do that, and they're not doing it. So they're only able to imagine what they're being shown, and
yeah.
it's actually going to make them less creative.
That's so interesting, even though they have more tools than we had growing up,
as far as
like more editing software.
Sure, sure, sure.
And
but they're only going to use those tools to replicate what they've seen their whole lives.
As opposed to an original thought.
That's right.
Wait a second, is that why people keep on doing remakes?
That's right. That's probably more the
I'm being very facetious to all of our listeners.
No, yeah, yeah. I think, yeah, that's the other thing is the incentive is, it's not a burden if it's just a means to an end. A burden, I think, implies that this is something I have to do. I would do it for free. A means to an end is this is my ladder to get more attention, to get more money, to get more fame, et cetera, et cetera. It's not a burden.
So a burden and a ladder are two different things.
Yeah, yeah.
A ladder is something that you feel like you have to force and climb.
Yeah.
A burden is an interior conviction. It's, and I don't want to get all preachy on this, but I am going to right now. So you guys get out your notebooks and write this down.
Yeah.
But it's the difference between people, it's the difference between the disciples saying, Jesus, it's now time to overthrow Rome.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he's saying, for the joy set before me, yeah, I endured the cross.
Right, right.
Their thought he was going to be taking over the throne.
Yeah.
Literally.
Yeah.
Like literally the king.
Become king of that
and
time.
And he was saying, no, I have a core conviction.
Yeah.
I'm going to give my life.
Yeah.
And I believe in this so much, it's going to... I'm going to cling to the cross.
Yeah.
The very thing that's going to kill me.
Mm-hmm.
And that is such a beautiful poetic thing to think about.
Right.
And then you also look at Jesus when it comes to his boundaries. Mm-hmm. And we've also said this again in other previous seasons. Mm-hmm. Anytime Jesus did a miracle, it mm-hmm. says he often withdrew to a desolate place.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He often withdrew to a desolate place.
Yeah.
He often withdrew to a desolate place.
Yeah.
Now, sometimes people would follow him mm-hmm. and he was moved with compassion and he would heal them.
Yeah.
But he kept on returning to the wilderness, to desolate places.
Yeah.
Because after so much attention,
yeah,
I mean, imagine if he was always doing a miracle montage.
Yeah, just everywhere he goes, me healing him all the time. Yeah,
I mean, we know that power would leave him because the woman who touched the hem of his garment,
yeah,
he said, I felt power leave me,
right,
which means he did not have a insurmountable amount of power every day.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think so?
I mean, I don't know. There's no way to know.
There's no way to know.
But he could tell when it shifted.
He can tell. He could tell when it left him.
Yeah.
So I'm sure that he could tell. Sorry, I didn't want to misquote the Bible. No, so disregard everything I just said. Basically, Jesus has all the power in the world.
Yeah.
But he did feel the power leave him when the woman touched the hem of his garment.
Yeah.
Which means I'm sure he felt some type of power leaving him after he was doing miracles and signs and wonders
mm-hmm.
all day.
Mm-hmm.
And so in my mind, I'm like, well, he would often withdraw to a desolate place. I'm not going to put thoughts in Jesus's mind.
Sure.
I'm not going to put words in the Bible, but I'm like, there has to be a reason he would often withdraw.
Yeah.
There, that's a clear boundary.
Right.
Was it to recoup?
Yeah.
You know, I don't know.
Sure.
I'm guessing it was.
It would make sense. Contextually,
it would make sense contextually.
Yeah.
So anyways, I just think that the burden is something that you're saying, this is what I feel like I'm supposed to do with my life.
Yeah.
That core value, that core conviction. And once you know that, once you have that, life becomes a lot more clear,
mm-hmm.
a lot more focused.
That's right.
You know?
Yeah.
Another thing that I heard over the weekend is the greatest act of self-love is discipline.
Ah, wow. That's good.
I just thought that was so fascinating.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, granted, I heard a fitness coach say it.
No, it still works. Yeah.
But I'm not going to take credit for it, and I'm not going to say it was like Gandhi or Jesus.
Yeah.
It was just the greatest act of self-love is discipline.
Yeah.
And so whenever you are disciplined and you are saying, I am making this decision, when you are disciplined and you have strong core values, a strong conviction,
mm-hmm.
You will see fruit in your life.
Yeah.
It is it's the thing that honestly sometimes keeps us back as humans.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
As I'm thinking through, I know things that I'm not very disciplined on. Actually, well, I'll say this. Every Sunday, I have three different types of ice cream.
Yeah. Heck yeah.
Nice. And I am disciplined on that. But I think that that funny, that that like cheat day or whatever you'd want to say it, sure. It, it does make it easier not for me not to have ice cream on Saturday.
Yeah.
So my boundaries are easier because I'm like, oh, I'm definitely going to have ice cream on Sunday.
Yeah, there you go.
So it makes the boundaries easier.
It has its own space.
It has its own space.
Yeah.
And I also have seen that discipline in my life has given me more free time.
Yeah, yeah.
That's because awesome. I'm like, if I finish X, Y, and Z, you know, in the morning, the rest of the day, I'm just chilling. And I find that I'm more relaxed around, you know, my kids, or if plans don't go according, like if my plans don't go according to plan.
Right, right, right.
I'm more like laissez-faire.
Sure.
If if my morning disciplined routine is like set in stone, or once that's done.
Of course.
Anyways.
No, it makes sense. I'm just gonna check one thing because this went to screensaver mode, and I'm gonna make sure it's still recording. Okay, we're good. Yeah. I'll cut it out. Don't worry.
Yeah.
Or I won't, and you'll just see that.
You'll see it.
Another thing that's interesting about that is it exposes how countercultural his approach was, because
for Jesus, you're talking
about. Yes, exactly. Yeah. And so, which means if you're gonna follow him and go about it that way, or if you're gonna get a burden from him, because there's the way the world does things, which is if you were to take all the abilities Jesus had, all the power he had, and you gave it to an individual now, today, they would market the heck out of it. They would turn it into a brand.
Proselytize it.
And they'd make a lot of money, and they'd want a lot of attention. All the main things that most people want.
They would automate. They would be like, hey, every Wednesday morning, check our behind-the-scenes podcast.
Yeah.
They would
create a schedule. They would make a whole economy out of it.
Yeah.
And then they would burn themselves out, and they would ruin their own life and nullify everything they ever taught.
Mm.
Which is interesting that there were, this gets morbid, but it proves the point way too well.
Say it.
Like, when they studied super high IQ individuals,
yes.
Like there was a gentleman who had keep in mind, Einstein's IQ was like 163.
Yes.
And 140 or above is considered genius. There was a guy, I believe he's still alive, 250.
No way.
And they were interviewing him, like, what's it like to have so much intellectual power? And he was like, it is the most miserable thing you can imagine, and worse than that. So he actually retired to a farm where he just, like, lives with horses. There was another kid who, at a very, very, very young age, had a very high IQ. He was winning chess tournaments. He was doing all this stuff.
Bobby Fischer?
It wasn't Bobby Fischer. Oh. Because this particular individual finished college very young, finished like high level math courses, physics courses.
Okay.
And then committed suicide.
Really?
Because his brain power was super high, but it was a burden too big for him to have a brain like that. And so
he was like, I am so smart, I'm going to take my life.
No, he was just like, when your brain is moving that fast all the time, and your world is not set up for how you're operating, I can imagine it's miserable. So when you see the way Jesus did it and his pattern, what I'm saying is the way the world does things ruins itself.
Yes.
And Jesus had this other approach that was right side up, where it was, I will operate as I operate, and then I will retreat. So there's one example, and I'm trying to set it up for the way Jesus does things puts the impetus on God to be miraculous as opposed for people to be superhuman. So Jesus finds out that his dear friend John the Baptist has been beheaded. And in the attempt to go be alone with his disciples to grieve, is interrupted by 5,000 men and their families. He feeds all of them miraculously, and then he sends the disciples. He goes, can you guys get in the boat and just cross to the other side? And then he goes up into the mountain alone to a desolate place to just recuperate. What's interesting, though, is he meets them in the ocean, on the Sea of Galilee. He meets them on the water, walking on the water, and it says in one of the Gospels, his intention was to pass them. He was merely trying to get to the next place. So what I'm trying to say is,
after his recoup, he walked on water.
For him to be able to meet his disciples on where they were going to go to fulfill the long-term purpose of his life, some supernatural things needed to happen. So what I'm saying is, most people do not pass the test of believing that God's pace for their life will still accomplish what they're supposed to accomplish.
All right, say that again, but slower.
Most people do not pass the test of having to trust God's pace for their life.
Trusting God's pace for their life.
The worst thing you can do is have a God-given vision and that you try to go about with your own plan and method.
Yeah.
Because if you were to say, hey, here's what we're going to do. We're going to set up a kingdom that will rule forever. It will be king over all people. It was hard enough back then to become king at one time.
Yeah.
And so you go to these 12 disciples who all flunk out of rabbi school. They're fishermen, they're tax collectors, whatever. And you bring this burden of like, you're going to be the people who set up the entire world that like the time and space is all going to be fixated on this one time period. Like human history is bent right here. And imagine these disciples trying to, in fact, in that story where he goes, hey, how much would it cost to feed all these people? How much would it cost to give bread to these 5,000 families? And they're like, are you kidding me? Like, we would have to work for months, 6 months. The 13 of us would have to spend 6 months' salary to feed them one time. Mm-hmm. So multiply that scale times everything that Jesus is actually setting up to do.
Yeah.
You cannot achieve that with your human approach and intellect, right. No matter how smart you are, how wonderful you are. But with the grace of God, the supernatural stuff comes in, but you have to it's the proof is in that you trust his pace.
You
so
trust
the fact
his
that
pace.
The bottom line is people who know God will trust the pace he gives them, will have boundaries on the burden. Because if he gives you a burden without teaching you how to have boundaries, he's not helping you. He's crushing you.
Yeah, if he gives you burdens without teaching you the boundaries, he is not helping you, he's crushing you.
Yeah, and so he loves you, so he's not going to do that. So he's going to teach you boundaries first. And he's going to go, okay, now go about it this way. Here's an incremental increase in weight, incremental increase in responsibility, and then I will take care of the supernatural. Okay, so you're still going to meet your disciples at this time period on this place. I'll have you walk on water. And you have these miraculous things that happen, not because he was trying to make a show of it, but because that was what was necessary for the pace God had given him to make sense.
Yeah.
And I don't think the majority of people, I won't even talk about age. I've met people in their 60s who are like this and people who are in their teen years who are like this and everything in between, myself included. You really know if someone trusts God when they're not in a hurry. When they're not like trying to blitzkrieg their way through life and through people and through things and through, you know, ideas. And it's merely like, I'm going to operate at God's pace for my life. There are going to be gaps that I cannot achieve.
Right.
That's where I need God's
supernatural. The God gap.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that's something about Jesus's approach that tells me if you're going to follow him and you're not going to pay attention to his pace, you won't last. It'll crush you and you'll lose heart very quickly. There's plenty of things that can happen after that.
I think that's such a beautiful approach to life.
Yeah.
And knowing like, you know, that whole burden is knowing why you're doing what you're doing.
That's right.
Sometimes whenever people get in burnout mode, because right now, sometimes people who work for a church or they work in the audiovisual department or in a creative department, they're like, I've done every graphic I know to do.
Sure.
And I don't know any more fonts or textures or gradients or colors. And I'm on Pinterest and I still can't find anything.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
let's just get a tree and throw a, you know, Times New Roman on it.
Yeah.
As far as all of our graphic
designs.
Or more
designs. Realistically, let's just see what this person did in copy.
Yeah, let's just see what this church did.
What did Virgil Abloh do 2 years ago?
Right.
5 years ago.
Yes. And so when that, I think it helps going back of, wait, why am I a designer?
Yeah.
Why do we do these productions?
Yeah.
Why, if I'm a pastor, why am I preaching this weekend? Because when you go back to the why, it makes things more clear. And I know that sounds very simple, but it is fascinating to me how many times, how many times I can forget my why.
Sure.
And whenever I get tired or burned out, or, you know, I have my kids on the weekends. And so because I'm the one who takes them to all of their events, like drums and flag football and soccer. Right now they're in soccer, flag football, and drums and tennis.
Wow, that's a lot.
Yeah, well, I have to schedule all of those
yeah.
on the days that I have them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so there are some weekends where I'm like, whoa, okay. And then I have to ask myself, why am I doing this?
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm like, well, the kids really, really wanted to do these things. They are enjoying them.
Yeah.
They're getting better at them.
Yeah.
Okay. Then I really have nothing to say.
Sure.
So like, dad up. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
No, right, right, right. Because there's an even deeper thing there that you're probably not, it's too emotionally lively to stare at all the time, which is beneath the core conviction of these kids want to be good at this stuff is I am a good dad and I want these kids to experience the good dad that they have.
Yeah.
So I'm going to help grow them in these areas.
Yes.
You know?
And that is, yes. Thank you for saying that.
Yeah.
And that is a core conviction for mine is that
absolutely.
There are so many things where I get frustrated
yeah.
because I am like, gosh, dang it. There is times where I get like upset because I'm like, how come I'm the one who has to do whatever?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
But then I just quickly shut up because I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
This is my job. I chose this
yeah,
life.
Absolutely.
I'm
yeah.
a dad.
Yeah.
There is no other option.
Yeah.
And so there's no other option except for being a crappy dad.
Sure.
Yeah. And that is something that is a temptation
sometimes. Fair. That's fair. That's fair.
Being a crappy dad is a temptation.
Yeah.
But, you know, I just... As of right now, today, I refused to
that's
be
right.
a bad
there you
dad.
Go. Absolutely.
And I feel like that's a daily thing that mm-hmm. you just got to decide.
Yeah. By the way, imagine how many listeners are feeling the same way as a mom or a dad, where they're like very much resonating with what you're saying.
Yes. And if you do have kids, or if you are a single parent, or if you have them on the weekends, or maybe you have them all the time and the other parent is not involved, and you're also dealing with child support and all of that other stuff. The one thing that I just keep on rest assuring is my yoke is easy and my burden is light. Going back to what Arvin said is that, okay, this is a burden. It does exist.
Yeah.
But it's supposed to be light. And if whatever I'm stressing about, that is the God gap.
Yeah, exactly.
That's where the miracle can happen.
Yeah.
And so God, you're going to have to do these things because everything else, I can't do these three things. And so I can do these two things.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you're going to have to show up in these other three areas.
That's right.
And I think that it's a refreshing way, specifically for those of you who feel like you are on that, man, I don't know how much more I have left in my tank. Mm-hmm. Me and Arvin are just saying, don't give up.
Mm-hmm.
Look at your burden.
Mm-hmm.
Look at your boundaries and getting into that. I think that God cycle, looking at Jesus in the Bible, what a great example of anytime something big needed to happen, there was a desolate place that he withdrew to. Not that you leave your job,
right?
But just being very intentional on your boundaries. And it is good to be without your phone, to be not around people always.
Yeah, exactly.
And as a social butterfly, maybe you're like, well, I have to be around people or else I'm sad. Well, then maybe you for sure need to be alone.
You gotta.
If you can't
especially
be alone,
you.
You need to be alone.
If you, yeah, exactly.
Because it will force you to confront things and all of those things, it is for your good. At the end of the day, your stage is only as strong as you're behind the scenes.
That's really good.
If you're behind the scenes is a hot mess, it's only a matter of time before what you put out on stage is going to be a hot mess.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And so, you know, I'll close with this. It was one thing that was refreshing this weekend. Pastor Paul, we started this series on the book of James.
Yeah.
It's so good. Please go listen to that sermon.
Yeah.
He went James 1 through verse 12.
Yeah.
And then hit on James 3 a little bit. But one thing, Sunday, 11 a.m., he was talking and he was like, guys, last night I preached such a bad sermon. And he was like, Saturday night service was so not good. And he was like, and I went home and I was really like upset and sad, trying to figure out why I just did so bad. And he is saying this not even 24 hours later on stage in front of the 11 a.m. And he goes, and then when I got home, my kids were hiding in the bushes with super soakers. And they just wanted to have a water gun fight.
Yeah.
And so anyways, he's like, I got in this water gun fight and I was like, all of the people who hated my sermon are, most of them are going to be back next Saturday.
Yeah.
And I'm going to get another chance.
Yeah.
And tomorrow I have the 9 a.m. and I have the 11 a.m.
Yeah.
So I'm just not going to post the Saturday 5 p.m. on YouTube.
Right.
And whenever you just, he said that in front of everyone. So now everyone kind of knows the shtick of if it's not good, you put the 11 a.m. on YouTube.
Yeah, put it back in the oven.
Yeah, put it back in the oven. And sometimes when you sleep on it and you're still figuring it out, like as a pastor, if you are going to preach a sermon every single weekend and you're not going to plagiarize and steal from another preacher,
that's right.
That's a lot to come up with.
Right.
That's so much content.
That's right.
And after doing it for 3 years, 4 years, even 2 years, but Paul, you know, I think this is his seventh year, our eighth year.
I think we're coming up on 10, right?
Oh my gosh.
Nine?
Okay.
It was 2015.
Yeah.
This is 2024.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, dude.
9 years.
It's amazing.
But you think about preaching every weekend, you're going to have misses.
Sure.
You're going to have, you're going to have weekends where you're like, yikes, whatever. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, I think what was good is that Sunday afternoon, they figured out to have a person who takes their kids over to my mother's house.
Nice.
And all of their kids hang out at my mom's house and they play
nice
all Sunday afternoon.
Yeah.
And Paul and Ashley are just together.
Good.
Just them two alone.
Yeah.
Like immediately smart after a service. That's what they do.
Beautiful.
And then of course on Mondays, Pastor Paul, most pastors take off on Mondays.
Sure.
You know, and I think that the only way now, he could get ahead and study his sermon.
Sure.
But I think the best thing, whether it's whatever fills your cup, watching movies, riding the bike, he loves pickleball.
Yeah.
Those things, it gets you in the rhythm, the unforced rhythms of grace that I think are so important. If you are a believer and the goal is, I want to be this in this for the long term, of getting in that rhythm of healthy burdens, healthy boundaries, and then following the Jesus principle, and learning the unforced rhythms of grace.
I agree.
I agree too. Thank you guys so much for listening and watching behind the scenes
of our best days.
We love you. We'll see you next time.